5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice in its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister looking. You know, the look it was giving me.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show. Welcome to the show, everyone. Happy Wednesday to you. Tonight, I was actually going to speak with Bobby Hamilton. He's the co-founder of the GCBRO, and he had a fascinating encounter when he was a child. Unfortunately, Bobby hasn't been feeling good most of the week, and so we're going to try and get him on the show another time. Tonight, I want to welcome Bill, and Bill's actually from Oklahoma. Bill's been in law enforcement all of his life, served in the military prior to that, and has a lot of interesting encounter stories that he has personally been involved with. So I want to go ahead and welcome Bill to the show. Bill, you're aware of Bobby's story.
Oh, my God, yeah. With that thing sitting there beckoning to him, it's like, holy crap, that just sends chills down your spine thinking about that.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting stories. You know, I was trying to get him on because I really wanted him to tell the story on the air. And I was talking with Tim Sermons about this. Bobby's story is just... It reminds me, I don't know, have you ever heard of the cowman story?
No, I don't think so.
Well, the cowman story is very identical to Bobby's story. And what happened in the cowman story was a little kid who called these things a cowman. He said it stunk like a cow. And I guess some of the coloring it had was like a cow. So the little boy used to call it the cowman. What happened is the thing would come up to the little boy's window at night and kind of do the same type of thing that Bobby's describing. It would use its finger to kind of direct him to the window. He'd go to the window. The creature would make faces, and the little boy would make faces back at the creature. You know, you don't know if there's something sinister going on there. You don't know if there's something...
They're after kids. I firmly believe they're after kids. I used to work with a guy, full-blood Cherokee fella, that lived near Stillwell, Oklahoma, and he knew I was into Bigfoot, but it took him a while before he realized how serious I was about it. And then he opened up to me about something happened to him that just, it shocked me to hear. When he was a little kid, he remember playing out in his yard. And they lived out in the country. Because he saw this bear man come out of the woods. And he said, I wasn't afraid of it. I was looking at it. It was looking at me. And he said, the thing picked me up. And it just started walking towards the woods with me. He says, oh, the whole time I wasn't afraid. I wasn't feeling fear. And then he heard his mother screaming, and he kind of tried to look around, and he sees her coming across their yard with a broom. And he says, at that moment, he just panicked, realized something wasn't right. And he says, that thing dropped him and took off running into the woods. And she scooped him up and ran to the house. And he said, it wasn't too long after that moved out of there. But And it's like, my God, what was that thing going to do with him? But
yeah, it was probably going to eat him. Yeah, I don't
doubt
it either. But, you know, even in like Bobby Hamilton's story, you know, he's the co-founder of the GCBRO. And what he describes in his encounter was it motioning for him to come to the window, which is very human-like behavior. Very human-like behavior. And it's just terrifying to... you hear all of these stories about kids that go missing. You know, they're out hiking or... And then you wonder what happens to them. Well, kind of reminds you of, what's that story David Pilates was talking about where...
Oh, missing 411?
Yeah, missing 411. And one of the witnesses, the Dennis Martin case, one of the witnesses said that a bear running on two legs had what looked like a boy over his shoulder running through the woods. You know, I mean, I hate to hear stuff like that.
You know, as a parent, that just strikes me to the core. It just, you know, people need to know that going out in the woods and enjoying nature is great, but you've got to be prepared. You got to know what the hell's out there, because these things are out, and I definitely believe they hunt children. At our place in eastern Oklahoma, you know, I've been going down there. We've had a place since the early 70s, and several years ago, we had, I think it's an act of aggression where there was two of them trying to push my two kids down a road, trying to force them down a road away from the cabin. And I know they sure as hell wasn't planning on playing with them. But, what happened was where our place is, we have a cabin. It's up on top of this, acreage that we've got. It's about, probably 700 foot elevation, but you go up this road to get to it. Off to the right, it drops off down into a canyon that just basically runs straight north towards I-40. Well, the kids, went out there and they started walking down the road looking for arrowheads there's a tree, they call it the rock hollow tree, but they'd go up there and it's right on the edge of the canyon by the road, and they would throw rocks off in there and hear it, you know, bump and echo going down into that hollow tree. They was doing that, and they heard a lot of movement down at the bottom of the canyon. So my daughter's thinking, oh, that's deer. So she gets her phone out. She's going to get video of these deer, and my son picks a rock up, and he chunks it way off down in there. And holy smokes, all hell broke loose. Said rocks started coming back at them. And they're thinking, this is not deer. This is something else. Then they started hearing this thing screaming. And they're thinking, we got to get back to the cabin. Well, they're halfway down that road. Well, they start to get back up the road to the cabin, and off to their, well, they're facing north. Off to their right is a ridge, off to their right, and rocks started coming from there, and then they started hearing screams. And the more they was going towards the cabin, they could tell these two animals, whatever the heck it was screaming, was going towards the road, trying to, kind of like an impeding movement to keep them from getting up to the cabin. So they started going down the road. And then my son realized that we got to get help. So daughter's on the phone calling for help, and we go flying down there, and I'm honking on the truck horn, and when I come around this bend, I see him standing there, and the daughter is just in a blind panic. He's got her, and he carries a rifle with him when he goes out in the woods, AK-74, and he's got the canyon covered, and they are just scared to death. And I firmly believe those things are trying to force on that road where they get ambushed. That's the only act of, I can say, the only act of aggression we had on that place. You gotta be prepared. And, the funny thing of it is, you wanna get the video. Well, when all this started breaking loose, she was able to record just a tiny bit of it, and you can, you can barely hear the scream winding down, and then you hear my horn on the truck honking in the distance, and, it was like they were ready to get in the back of that truck and get the heck out of there.
Yeah, I don't blame them. I wanted to ask you, I want to talk about the Chicken Man first, and then I want to talk about some of your experiences and some of your encounters. And I really do appreciate you coming on the show, Bill, because, you know, it's so hard to get people from your area. Like you and I talked about yesterday, it's so hard to get people from the Midwest and the South to come out and talk about this, because I think that's really the gold mine. As far as I'm starting to learn, that's where the gold mine is as far as encounter stories. And but it's in the same breath, it's so hard to get people from that area to come out and say, okay, here's what we're seeing, here's what I've experienced, here's what, especially someone in law enforcement. So I really do appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, it's just people just don't like to get ridiculed. You know, I went through that with my El Reno Chicken Man deal when I told my family members about it. And I just, you know, I said, well, hell with it then. I just quit talking about it to them and kind of kept it to myself. And I saw your website there that you had posted an article about that. That's what inspired me to give you a call, because, yeah, a buddy of mine ran into, I know it was a thing, before that all broke loose. So it was pretty wild.
Well, tell us about it. What happened with you and your friend, and then we can go into the chicken man story.
Well, it was a buddy and I went coon hunting, and it was close to the end of 1970, I guess. It was a full moon. There was snow on the ground. It wasn't snow, it was just enough to cover everything, and with the full moon, it just was pretty bright out there. But we had gone north out of El Reno towards the river, and we went up to a place called Foreman Bridge, and then you could veer off to the right towards the east and park parallel to the banks of the river. And I went out there and didn't have much luck, so it was about 2 or so in the morning. We were sitting back at the vehicle with a cup of coffee trying to warm up. I look up the road, and I see this skunk just kind of diddy-bopping down the road of his truck. And I said, well, would you skin him? And at least he won't go home empty-handed. And he said, sure. So I got out and drew a bead on that rascal. And, I'm standing there, and it felt like I just rubbed the hairs on the back of my neck. I mean, the hackles were standing up, and I knew something wasn't right. I had that feeling I was being watched. I looked over to my right towards the edge of that river, and there's a tree laying on its side, big tree trunk, and I see this black spot or black shape on the other side of the tree trunk, and I'm thinking, well, why the hell's casting that shadow? So I'm looking up the full moon, and I'm looking back at the tree trunk, and then I see this bright red light come on, first thing I thought of was a red reflector. You know, sometimes people nail reflectors on the trees, you know, on each side of their entrance to a driveway. So I'm looking at that. Well, dadgum, another one pops open. And so now I got these two of these things looking at me. And they're just the purest bright red. And that's probably about the size of pop bottles, the ends of pop bottles. And I'm looking at it, and I hollered at my friend. I said, hey, get out here, take a look at this. And when he gets out, that's when this thing, you can see it coming up in the air, and this sucker is tall, it's wide, and it's thick. And you can see it blinking its eyes and moving its head. And I don't know if it was reflecting from the moon, from the dome light in that vehicle, but it probably just a few seconds. And that thing rolled off the side of that bank of that river, and you can hear it crashing down through all the brush and junk and all that was there. And it hit the ice because the river was frozen. Now, it's not like a solid body of water. There's sandbars from kind of one side to the other. And that rascal took off running towards the west, and you can hear it crunching through the ice and getting on the sandbars and just, I mean, boom, 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 it was gone. And so we're like, well, what in the hell was that thing? We can't tell anybody about it because I think we're out here smoking up or something. So we kept it ourselves. Well, it's no time after that. That's when the El Reno Chicken Man story broke. Well, that happened. That incident there was several miles west of where we were at. So, on the south side of Highway 81, we're across that North Canadian River to the south of the river, and it's on the west side of the road. There's a huge slough or a ditch that runs parallel to the river and runs in right into it. And whatever the thing was, come up out of that river, and I think it stayed concealed in that channel or that slough, and then it went up to the Palmer house. It's a rent house with chicken coops and things there. And it literally tore that house all to pieces, the chicken house, ripped the door off, killed all the poultry in it, left footprints, bloody handprints, just, I don't know if it was eating them or what, but then it went back down that channel back to the river. There's no doubt in my mind, probably the same thing that my buddy and I saw. Well, just you cross that bridge and you go a little further north and you come up to the Concho Indian Reservation. They've got a casino there. And years later, after our incident, just a few years back in the past, their security cameras caught one of those coming up, getting in their trash bins and their grease traps, and they got that documented. But it's something that the tribal police are not going to turn loose to the public. But it darn sure did get recorded, because I know of a dispatcher that got to see the tape. So that one particular area there has had sightings going on for years.
Yeah, and I want to come back to the Indian, the reservation, the casino there. But on the Chicken Man incident with Palmer, the farmer, you know, there was so much evidence, and it's kind of a shame that this took place. I think it was the late 60s, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 60 or 70.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame that it took place in that time era, because there was so much evidence collected. There was the footprints, there was the blood, there was the hair. Even on the door that it had broken, it had left a bloody handprint. And he had actually taken the door off, and he took it to a local zoo, didn't he, and had a primatologist look at it?
Yeah, Lawrence Curtis was the director of the zoo at that time, and they said, that's definitely a primate, humanoid-type hand. I talked to one of the officers, he's deceased now, but at that time I talked to one of the officers that was out there at the scene, and he was definitely shook. So this is the craziest thing he'd ever seen. It definitely wasn't just a bunch of vandals coming up to somebody's chicken coop and tearing things up.
And what's interesting is it didn't really eat any of the chickens. It just killed them, just broke their necks,
right,
didn't it?
Right. Yep. Just messed them up, stomped on. From what he was telling me, that stomped on, just killed. It was like just getting in there for the heck of it.
And it's interesting too. I think just a couple miles from there, and you probably know this better than I do, Bill, but a couple miles from there, there was another gentleman who was saying there's a loose orangutan out in the woods, and he was trying to trap it. And he kept describing this large, upright orangutan running around. I don't know too many orangutans that could survive out there in Oklahoma.
I don't either, no, sir. But there's, for years, people have been seeing, I think it's a family group of them. It's three, at least three of them. And I just believe it's a family group. And I don't know if that's what he was seeing, but if it's in that general area, it most likely was. But then again, people just, they keep to themselves, and they're not going to tell folks about it, outsiders about it, because they just don't want to get ridiculed.
And that's the thing about this, that's the whole shame, is that when you do come out, you do get ridiculed for, you know, there's always people trying to tear apart people's stories, and it's kind of a shame, you know. It's kind of a, people should be free to come out and say, hey, I saw this out in the woods, or hey, I experienced this. It kind of goes back, I was talking about the, and I'll get to the casino incident here in a minute. But I was talking about lights the other couple shows back, and I was talking about these lights people are seeing. I just got a flood of people who contacted me and said, hey, yeah, I saw these lights, you know. And so, I mean, it's kind of a shame that people can't, it takes one person to come forward and say, hey, it's okay to talk about this. And then all of a sudden everyone will come and say, hey, I saw this. I know, I had a lady who just sent me a message on Facebook and said that, they were out hiking and they had seen these lights and they didn't know what they were. And she said, no, it wasn't a UFO. She said it was just these weird lights flying around in the forest. And her mother got terrified and they ran and they left. Well, they had made a pact not to tell anyone because she was so afraid of being ridiculed over just seeing lights in the forest.
I know exactly how they feel, because that's what my buddy and I basically did when we ran into that nail out on the bridge.
The incident at the casino is an interesting incident, and you and I talked about that too yesterday, and I think you hit it right on the head, which I didn't really think about, because in my mind I was thinking, this is great advertisement. This would be great to have people come to the casino. And for the people listening, basically what happened is, on this Indian reservation out there in Oklahoma, they had captured a Sasquatch walking across a parking lot, digging into a dumpster, and then basically exiting. But where they had actually captured it, from people who had seen the film, have come forward and said it's really, really clear footage, and the thing is huge. And I always wondered why they wouldn't release it. I always wondered why they wouldn't come forward and say, "Hey, look, here's what we have." Because I've heard through third party, you know, second and third parties that have seen it, that it's probably some of the best footage out there.
You know, they know these things are out there. They know they exist, and it's just part of life. And they're just gonna just accept it for what it is. They don't want a bunch of people out there running around with rifles looking for this thing to try and shoot it. It's just, I can see their point. But that's what that's all about. They definitely was not going to turn it loose to the public to keep people out from coming up there with problems and trying to hunt these things. You know they're there, you just leave them alone, and you kind of coexist, kind of, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and I didn't think about, you know, imagine if you had someone come out, blast it, and then leave. Now the casino might have a bigger issue on their hand than they might look back and go, well, we regret letting that video out.
It's not uncommon for ever a couple of years to read the paper about how some guys have been arrested for trespassing out there. The sheriffs get called, they go out there, and there's a bunch of guys with rifles and spotlights, and they're basically for the Bigfoot. And it's like, good gosh, people's got cattle out there, they've got homes out there, and they don't need a bunch of folks running around taking pot shots, things moving in the dark. It's just not safe.
Yeah. Now talk a little bit, Bill, you had a property and you had these things out around your property. I know you started talking about it there in the beginning, but can you talk about some of the things you experienced around your property?
Sure. Oh, yes. We've got, it's an acreage there in eastern Oklahoma. We're sitting out there one night cooking up hot dogs and stuff, and every now and then I'd get up with my flashlight and scan the pond, just looking for eye shine, raccoons or possums or anything. Well, I'm scanning out towards our target we got set up, and I see this tan-colored, kind of like deer-colored animal coming up out of the woods, out of that canyon, right by our 100-yard target. He's got these bright, kind of goldish green eyes, and I'm thinking, this has got to be a buck as big as this thing is. So we're all looking at this thing. Now, my light isn't powerful enough to give you good detail. You can just kind of see the shape and coloring and then the bright eyes, and we're all looking at it, and I thought, my gosh, this thing is huge. And then it starts raising up, and then I'm thinking, well, what in the hell is that deer eating on? Because they'll stand up on her back legs and browse off the little branches and stuff. And he didn't go back down to the ground. He just stood there. And it's like, good gosh, this thing is huge. Well, we're looking at it, and then it starts swinging or and sideways, left, looking at us. And I thought, oh, this can't be good.
It starts swaying on you back and forth.
Swaying left, just kind of rocking side to side, and right at that time, you know, I kind of had that feeling like, oh, something's about to happen. Well, I had a rifle with me, so I cracked off a shot straight up at me. Well, that thing took off running back down the canyon. Everybody on the picnic, yeah, they took off running back towards the cabin, and that barbecue come to an end. But that's the first time we actually saw anything. But then over the years, we started figuring out a pattern. Things got most active twice a year, in the June, around July, when all the wild blackberries were on the bushes. I mean, they're all over that place down there. And then the other time of the year would be, deer season, when the persimmon trees were just covered with persimmon. And we got persimmon trees all around that cabin, and we put the blackberries off in the fields behind the cabin. But we'd get out there and all about June or so, and I'd start blowing either wounded, like rabbit calls or predator calls, or I could do, and start getting responses. We had we're sitting out there with kids, and we had this deal happen to us. It was really strange. We heard a hoot owl way off in the woods. So I hollered back at it, and right off the bat, it hollered back, and it sounded really loud, and it sounded kind of different. It wasn't quite right. So I hooted again, and then a second one responded down in that canyon. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, what's going on here? Well, I hooted again, and then the first one we heard straight to our west went off, and then the one down in the canyon went off, and they were getting closer, and they were getting louder. And I knew then that wasn't a hoot owl, because the way they were mimicking them, but they were not owls. Well, I hollered one more time, and I mean, you could hear stuff tearing through the woods, you know. I'm sitting there thinking, my gosh, we're about to see some things combusting out of the tree line. Well, there, you hear this stuff crashing through the woods, and boom, like someone hit the air brakes right at the bridge and just stopped, dead silent. And then it was like, boom, boom, boom. Those trees started shaking, and it sounded like in the old Tarzan movie, the chief got mad, and he started hopping, doing that scream, that mad monkey call and yell. That's what was happening. Well, I thought, I got to get the kids out of here. We hauled ourselves back up to the cabin. Went back out there just a little while, me and my older son, and it was just dead silence out there. I mean, there wasn't any frogs chirping around the pond, no nothing. And it happened several times over the years. Well, the last time we tried that, we was out there with my kids, and we had our hound with us, and I was blown on a wounded rabbit call. 11:30 or so, and I decided we got to get back up to the cabin and get something to drink because my throat was dry, and so I left my rifle there with my other kids, and the hound was there, and then my son and I started walking towards the cabin. I'm walking up towards the cabin, and I've got that lantern going by the front, so it's kind of blinding us. Just as we come to the front door, my wife's inside the cabin at the kitchen, at the sink, and there's a window there. Well, she screams my name real loud, and then the kids start screaming out there at the picnic table. And so I go running back out there, and they're all up under that table. And it's like, what's going on? What's happened? I go, didn't you see that? Didn't you see that? I go, what? He says, there was something, a man or something, walking around this pond, walking towards the back side of the cabin as my son and I was walking towards the front door. We were kind of on a path we would intersect, but this thing went behind the cabin, and as it went past the cabin, it kind of turned a little bit and looked at my wife through the window there, and she thought that was me jumping out to scare her. So she hollered my name, and that's about the time the kids just started cutting loose. So, well, we gathered them all up and went running back inside, and same thing. We went back out with our rifles, and it was just dead silence out there.
You know, it's interesting how they maneuver around you. I mean, even in my own encounter, just how they tactically maneuver around you, and then even being out there in Texas with Bob, and I'm, you know, hearing this thing maneuver around, it was obviously moving to the rear of us, which made me uncomfortable to say the least, but it was definitely maneuvering to the rear of us, trying to get behind us.
And then, it's trying to ambush you.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it felt like it was trying to ambush us. It wasn't really a direct coming right at you. It was almost more like an ambush is what it felt like. And then in your own situation, you know, you guys are walking to the front of a cabin, and you know, it kind of comes around towards the rear where you guys are at. Interesting.
There's a couple big pine trees and a few persimmon trees, and they kept those between us and him. So, you know, that may be one of the reasons we didn't see it, but it definitely knew what it was doing. You know, if it wanted to, it could have run up there and grabbed us, probably been on us before we knew it, but evidently it wasn't interested in that, but it sure come walking around that cabin. Sure did.
Yeah, I kind of have a theory about that. And I could be way off on my theory. Like I've always said before on the show, I don't have one in my garage. I'm in a cage. I'm studying. But I have kind of, my theory on it is I think if you're alone, you're in trouble. Or if you're a child or a woman and you're out there by yourself, you're in trouble. If you're within a group of people, it seems like a lot less bad things happen. And I don't know if it's something on their end when it's almost too much of it's too risky of a fight because you don't know, you know, on their end, things could go bad on their part, which gives them a huge intelligence. Cause I don't know that a grizzly bear, if they're going to attack you, they're just going to attack you. These things seem to be more tactical in their attacks, or like you were describing with the child in the beginning with your friend who was picked up by one. You know, it was easy meal until the mother comes out and starts flipping out, and then it drops it and decides, you know, it's kind of a self-preservation on its own part, decides it's not worth taking this and it's time to go.
Well, she's carrying a broom. He said she was swinging that broom, and I've often wondered, maybe that thing, thought that might have been a rifle or some kind of weapon.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the first thing I thought, is I bet it thought it was a weapon. I bet it thought it was a rifle.
Yep, I firmly believe these things know, they understand what those rifles and pistols are all about, and I think you're right about that being alone in the woods deal. They're going to come up there like a predator, and they're going to snatch the stragglers, or the ones that are way in front, the scouts. They're going to get the people that are off on their own. And it's just probably too much of a fight or too much of a chance of getting hurt was to just go busting in there and trying to snatch some people out of a group.
Yeah.
So I know down here, you see a group of guys in the woods, you can pretty well count they're going to be armed because there's woolly boogers out there.
Yeah, and that's the other interesting point I wanted to bring up is down in the South, you know, sometimes it's hard to find historical accounts about things that happen in the South unless you know what the locals named the creature at the time, like the corn man or the chicken man or woolly booger. You know, if you're looking for Bigfoot or Sasquatch by name down in the South and in the Midwest, it's kind of hard to come by some information, but if you know what the locals call it, you'll find historical accounts going back hundreds of years of people seeing these things. They just had their own names for them.
Yeah, that's right. Like there in McCurtain County, there's a newspaper been around since the early 1800s, and they've had several stories in there, like 1840s or so, of the McCurtain County man beast or manimal. They'll use the word manimal. So if you're doing searches, like on the internet and all that, if you type in those words, you'll probably come up with those. But then again, you need to know what phrases or terminology to actually go putting in to look for.
Now, you've never been in a situation where you were called out as a police officer to a scene to where someone is saying either a prowler's coming around. But there was one situation that you were involved in, and was it missing people?
Right. This was in the late 70s. I was with a group that formed up here in Oklahoma about interested in Bigfoot and things like that. And there was a group in Missouri, same deal, as went out looking for Bigfoot and all. Well, they were contacted by local authorities, and then they in turn contacted our group. And so we went on up there to see what we could figure out. But basically what it was a family had gone missing. They had a trailer home out on the acreage, and this thing had the door just literally peeled back. They were gone. The people was gone. There was huge footprints all over the place. There was blood stains everywhere, and there's like something happened, something bad happened. And the authorities were just trying to partake on what we thought it might be, because these were huge handprints and huge footprints. And I was basically told, well, I think it's a Bigfoot. Something's happened where one of them got in there and got these folks. Well, that just unheard of. They just could hardly believe that. And you know, we ended up coming back to Oklahoma, but I never did hear how that ended up. But definitely something had peeled that door back. I mean, just filled it like he's opening the top of a can, a sardine can. Drug him out of there is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, what's interesting is you don't really ever get to hear the final explanation on what had happened. There was an incident out here in Oregon, I want to say back in the 70s or 80s, and there was a gentleman who owned a bunch of land, and he was a logger. He was out logging the land, and I guess he did pretty well. But he had just recently moved to the area, and he was out there logging. The gentleman ended up not showing up. No one had heard from the family in a while. So they sent cops out to check on the family. And nothing really ever came of it. No one ever really said. They just ended up being missing. And there was a researcher who had been trying to get a hold of, but a researcher that was out actually looking into that incident. This was like about 6 months after the people disappeared. And he had found the property of where they were at. And what he describes the property as, he said it looked like King Kong went through, and basically there was blood. A lot of the items that were in the house were outside of the house. The door was ripped off. There was the inside. There was holes in the ceiling. And it just looked like hell had broke loose in there. And he said there was footprints, still footprints, around that piece of that trailer that the family was in, or the mobile home that they were in. Nothing ever really ever came of it. They didn't really, you never really hear the final story on, they just end up being missing, and the rest of that was just kind of swept under the rug as far as what happened to them. So it makes you wonder, too, what would set something like this off.
Well, there's something. I was able to read a report from a kind of south map that was similar to that. These folks called and had the sheriff come out, and said there was what they thought was prowlers, or there's something out in the woods. And it's bothering them, bothering their livestock. Well, they get a call, authorities get a call sometime later, and they come flying out there, and this house has been torn all to hell. I mean, the back door's been ripped open, ripped off the hinges, the house, it looked like a tornado went through there. Basically what happened was the husband was out there, and he went after this woolly booger, and he took some pot shots at it with his shotgun. And that damn thing followed him home, and it tried to put the hurt on him. It tore that place up. They was able to get to the truck and get out of there in time. When the sheriff's office showed up, it was crazy. He said the dadgum shotgun actually was laying on the floor, and the barrel had a huge bend in it. It was like it was maybe focused on that shotgun, because it might hurt it. Yeah, I don't know, but it just destroyed that house. And if they hadn't got out of there, I'm firmly convinced it would have got them, because it was mad, because he took some shots at this thing. So you got to be careful what you're doing out there. It's I'm in scouting, and I do a lot of hunting, and I tell everybody I have contact with out in the woods that there's things you can do and you can't do. As far as these things go, because you make them mad, you're gonna have to get out of there, because they will get mad and come out for revenge. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and that's the point about a lot of these stories. What's interesting is when you read through a lot of these encounter stories, you start to see a lot of repeated type behavior, like in the Cowman incident, and it made me think of Bobby Hamilton and what you had just said on this last one is. You know, and are you familiar with the Cowman incident, Bill?
No, sir. No, I'm not.
I'll have to send it to you. What ended up happening is it was up at the window. The wife started screaming, and they started trying to shoot this thing because it was coming up to the house, and it was starting to get aggressive, and it seemed to be focused on this little kid that the family had. It seemed to be at night it would come up to his window. And it would, you know, they would make faces, and it seemed to be really focused on the little kid, and they ended up shooting it. And so they left the house that night. They were so terrified. They ended up shooting this creature. Terrified, they all ran to the car, got in the car, left the house, and didn't come back. I don't think he came back for a day or two, but when he came back, the whole house had been torn apart. Everything in the house was completely demolished. They ended up turning it into the insurance company, but the whole house had been completely demolished. And what's interesting is the kid's room, the one kid that it was focused on was left alone. But everywhere else in the house was completely torn apart. You just hear that over and over and over again. It's kind of like what Mike Humphreys used to tell me from the Siege of Hanabi. If you shoot
one. Oh, yeah. Down at Hanabi. Yep.
Yeah. He used to tell me if you shoot one, chamber another round because you're going to need it. And
that's right. Yeah. If you hurt one, kill one. You got those family members to deal with, or that group that it's with that you don't see. Those are the ones going to be sneaking up on you. You're going to have one out there drawing your attention, but you might have two or three coming up on your backside. So, yeah, definitely, you have to be careful what you do out there.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too. You know, there's so much physical evidence. This is such a fascinating topic because there's so much physical evidence that I'm sure, as you know this as a police officer, there's so many witnesses that are basically describing the same thing. And there's some differences in what they describe, but the differences are based on what location they're at in the United States. But for the most part, everyone's describing the same type of creature. And then there is so much evidence. You know, there's the footprints, there's the hair, there's the blood. It's just amazing to me that the government doesn't come out or science doesn't come out and say, you know what, this thing is out there running around and there's just too much evidence to say it's not.
I firmly believe that there are people, authorities, within the government that know what's going on. I don't know why they're not releasing it or acknowledging it publicly. It could be economic reasons, you know, through, like endangered species type stuff. Hey, I don't know. We got a deal going on now where a bridge construction has been halted for a specific type of little catfish to get through their spawning and all that. Where this construction site is before they can continue on. So it's going to be shut down probably till June because of that. So I could see where if they come out, yep, these things do exist. Now we got to find out how many there are. We got to protect them. Well, what's going to happen to all that property that they're on? Like if you own this land, can you continue farming it or harvesting timber? You know, it could have some economic impact.
I think it would bring the economy to its knees. And people laugh at that, but I really think it'd bring the economy to its knees. You know, they'll say, well, what is it just going to stop lumber? Well, think about all the things that lumber touches. Lumber is more than just the lumber industry. It's this tree of other industries that it touches. And then you're right. The people who are going to be the most upset when a hunter or someone shoots one of these things and brings it in are the people that own the land around where these things are at, because that land's going to be taken from them.
Yep. Yep. That's right. And think about the national parks. Would you take your family camping at a national park if it was for sure things out there that could snatch your kids up or you? I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. It would cripple the outdoor activities too.
Yep.
As well.
Yep.
Do you still have things going on your property? Or do you still own that piece of property?
Sir. Yeah, it's mainly like the twice a year, end of June, July, and then in the fall when they're up there getting the persimmons. I had, not long ago, was down there, and we're down there. We don't have the outside high stone, just to have little critters come up, and we can watch them in the yard and all. But I forgot, I didn't know if I'd rolled my truck windows up. So I stepped out the front door and lit my truck up with my work light. And, no sooner that light came on and it sounded like a bear and a bull roaring at the same time. And it came from in front of me at the pond. And I couldn't move. All I could do is kind of pivot it. But I felt my organs vibrating, my chest vibrating. You could just feel that hitting you. And I pivoted at my hips and shined the light, you know, just holding it out like at the truck. And I pivot, and you can see this rascal standing there by the pond. He's kind of leaning forward, and he had an arm stretched out a little bit. To me, it seemed like either he's getting him a drink of water or he's shoving a frog or something in his mouth. I don't know, but boom, off that thing went, running right towards our 100-yard target and right down that canyon. You can hear him busting all through there. But, yeah, that we still have things happen every now and then. and we definitely keep our eyes and ears open. Now, December, we went down there for a family trip, and we took our metal detectors with us because there's old homesteads around there. So we was off in the woods where some of these places were, and was doing some metal detecting. So we got through, and we go back, walking back towards the truck, and we see a dadgum footprint in this pile of dirt, and it's a canine type print. But this sucker is like 6 inches by 6 inches. It's huge. The toes are all splayed out, and you can see the claws on it. So I thought, well, good gosh. Well, we ran to town, got some plaster repairs, came back, and we made some casts of this thing. And when we pulled that out of the dirt the next day and brushed it off, it just shocked us that there's something that damn big out there. And we've got coyotes, we got bears, we got mountain lions there. This wasn't any of that. This thing was huge. So I sent some pictures off to a fellow that's into the dog man that has some expertise on the subject, and he just see what he thought about it. And sure enough, he goes, "Buddy, I would definitely say you got them on your place now." But that's the first time in all these years we've ever seen anything like that. So we get to looking around, and we go off down in the bottoms, and we start finding these prints all over down there. So I don't know if something has moved in or what, but this darn sure isn't a wolf. It's too big for that. So we definitely are careful when we're out running around out there in the place.
Yeah, and I don't know what to think of that dogman thing anymore. You know, there is a type of Sasquatch that does kind of have, and I know I'm going to use the wrong term, I'm sure I'm going to get corrected on it, but a snout or a muzzle. And people have described it, you know, and so there is a type that has that, and whether it's a deformity or what it is, I don't know, but there is a type that where people describe it having a snout. But what's interesting in their descriptions is they are describing a Sasquatch, but they're describing it having a snout. Now, this other thing out there running around, I don't know what to think of it, because I think I've mentioned it on the show in the past. I've talked to several credible witnesses that came out and basically said, you're wrong on this being a primate. They would go with their descriptions. And some of these other descriptions that you listen to people tell, it sounds very canine. It sounds like it has a huge jaw, like a wolf. It has ears like a wolf. You know, but I would say more of the body of this, of a skinny Sasquatch is basically what they describe, but with long claws on the hands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the tracks I found down in Texas, I can tell you, I almost 100% sure were not Sasquatch tracks. They were something else.
Yeah, they had more dog-like.
Very much more like dog-like tracks. Yeah.
Well, since we found that print, I was checking, and in eastern Oklahoma, around the Kiamishi Mountains, they have been seeing things they call the hissing critter, and it's basically, I would guess, a dog man. And people have seen these things all around deer hunting, and it seemed like there's packs or groups of them. People have reported these things chasing deer down, chasing the hunters out of the woods. So, you know, I don't know if these things have migrated over to our neck of the woods now or what, but that's a whole new ball game there. That's something I don't quite know what to think about. I know I don't want one getting near me, because I don't think he's going to have the same attitude or outlook as a Sasquatch would.
Yeah, they tend to be a lot more aggressive. You know, I've talked to a few guys down there in Texas that describe these dogman type creatures. And I hate the name dogman, but I guess I'll just keep using it.
Yeah.
But they describe these dogman like creatures, and it's kind of, and for people listening, it's hard to understand. When you're down there and you're a local down there, they'll talk about Sasquatch the same way they'll talk about wild hogs, the same way they'll talk about alligators, the same way they'll talk about snakes. It's just a fact of life. You'll run into these things. But the moment you bring up this dogman, the guys that have ran into it, they're first to tell you that with the Sasquatch, they're kind of iffy on shooting one. They're, you know, unless one's coming at them. Most people think of hunters as bloodthirsty monster of people, but they're really not. They're actually, most hunters, I will say, in my case, every hunter I've ever met is probably one of the most ethical people you'll meet, because they won't just take a shot to take a shot. It has to be the right shot. And they're not just going to injure an animal. They're going to, if they shoot it, they're going to shoot it, and they're going to shoot it and kill it and eat it. And with the Sasquatch, so it kind of goes against a lot of what hunters believe when they run into one of these things, of just shooting it just for the hell of it. Now, they will tell you that if it's coming towards them, they'll blast it. They have no problem blasting it. But the few hunters I talked to while I was down in Texas, every one of them said, if I saw one of those dogmen creatures again, I would shoot it, and I'd shoot to kill it and not even hesitate on it.
You know, we do coyote hunting out here, and it's pretty much the same deal, I guess, as far as outlook on it. Yeah, I wouldn't take a pot shot at one of them Sasquatch. Because they're, you know, they're out in the woods. That's their place. That's fine. But if the rascal's trying to hurt me or mine, then I'm going to light him up. But if I was to come across one of these dog man deals, from what I've been reading on, I don't think I'd hesitate twice about dropping that sucker. I've heard reports on coming out of southeastern Oklahoma down at Kamishis, where these things have chased the hunters and killed deer and bothered livestock. I've never read a report or heard of a report where these things did not act aggressive.
Yeah. You never hear of anyone gifting with a dog man or feeding it apples or...
You might try it once and you're the gift.
Yeah.
Well, for years I've been trying to tell folks, listen, enjoy the outdoors, but you gotta be smart about it, because it's up to you to protect the people you're with, whether it's a group of scouts, whether it's your children, your spouse. You go out in them woods, you gotta be careful, because these rascals are out there. Most of the times they might just come along, they're curious and see what you got. You know, once everybody gets in the tents and all, they might poke around your camp. But then again, if you start taking pot shots at these things, you're going to have to get out of there, because you will make them mad. And good God, if you shoot one of these things, you definitely better get in that vehicle and get out of the area, because that family group is going to come after you. There's no doubt about it. You just got to be safe. Go off in the woods where you enjoy them. Go armed, ready to protect yourself. If there's a place where I am not allowed to go in there armed, then I'm not going to go camping there.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be able to protect yourself.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. It's like when I was telling you when we were in Texas, and the night that we were leaving one location, because we only had a permit to be in there for so long, but we were leaving one location, and all night long we were hearing vocals from every direction, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
And we were leaving, and the next day a Boy Scout troop was going to come in there and camp. And I remember thinking, man, should I say something to these kids? Should I pull the scoutmaster aside and say,
these folks need to realize, if you do go armed, you better pick the right stuff, because these things are massive. You've got to think in terms of, what do I have that can basically shoot through something about the width and thickness of a side-by-side refrigerator? These things are wide and they're thick. You look, 22s and things like that are not going to do anything. They'll really make them mad. So you got to carry something heavy enough to punch through that to keep yourself and your family members and friends safe.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Do you, when the creatures pass through your property, have you ever tried to get a picture of one, or have you ever tried? I would imagine you kind of grew up with this, so it's
interesting you said that. I got me a game cam here not too long ago, and I set that out. And that December when we was out there and found that first canine footprint, I had a trail cam set out, and I've got several pictures of deer right in front of it, and then there's one photo that I'll have to send you a copy of and see what you think about it, because what I'm thinking of, something come up behind that trail cam. I mean, these things know about those cameras. They know about it. They can see the IR. There's no doubt about it. Infrared, they can see that. But I'm thinking this rascal come up there, and it looks like he's standing right beside that lens when it went off, because you can see three deer in the background just in a sheer panic going different directions, and you see this one shape on the left side of the frame. But I'll send that to you and see what you think about it.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it. And it's one of those things to where I realize a photo is not going to prove that these things are real. A photo is not going to.
Yeah, they're not going to do a thing. I mean, photos, videos, sound recordings. Once you see one, it is definitely a life-changing experience. I don't care whether people believe it or not. I'm down there 63 years old, and these outfits are out there. You just need to know how to act around them when you're out in them woods.
Yeah, it's good advice. It's definitely good advice. Well, Bill, I want to thank you for coming on the show, and I want to thank you. I know even with your profession, sometimes it's hard to come forward and talk, and I just can't thank you enough for coming forward. I think that it's something that'll eventually come out. I think what it's going to take is a body. It's kind of like the casino footage you and I were just talking about. You know, they would have released that and 50% of the audience would have said it was a fake. The other 30% of trolls would have attacked it. And then there would have been a small percentage that would have said, hey, this looks real to me. And you're always going to have that. But I think once you have a body that comes out, or someone who's brave enough to bring one out, I think it's going to change the world, to be honest with you. I think it's going to shock the world, and it's going to be justification for all the people who said, hey, I saw this, and were either laughed at or called liars, or, you know, were torn apart because of what they said they saw. I think it's going to be it's going to be justice for all of those people, to come back and go, see, I told you so.
Yep. You are definitely right there. And you are definitely right. But I thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell you my story about things that I've encountered and the family's encountered. And like I said, I've been listening to your show now for a while, and we just look forward to each new broadcast, because you're the real deal. You're putting out the right information, and it's educating people. That's what it's all about, is educating them. And you're giving us good information. And it'll keep people safe. If they just listen, pay attention to what you're saying, what your people on your show is telling, it'll keep them safe. And you know, eventually this will get resolved as far as confirm whether they do exist or not. But it'll take a body being drugged in. But good Lord, that's going to take a group of people to get that thing out of there, because you'll probably be dealing with the family members. I don't doubt that a bit.
Yeah, it's going to be the fight of a life to get one out.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, I appreciate it.
Okay, well, you're sure welcome. I appreciate it, and I will. I'll get down to work, and then I'll start going through it. And if you want those photos, I'll sure email them to you, and just see what you think about them. And whatever you want to do with them, use them, send them, share them. You just feel free to, because if it helps with the cause, then that's a good deal. It's my pleasure.
Thanks so much, man.
Little wiser, to do something quieter.